Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's afternoon satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Arvind. And we are entering into that fortnight where we discuss about Swami's glorious African trip. We've been reliving that trip which happened almost half a century ago. In fact, we are celebrating the 50th year of that trip next year. But we are going through that trip this time, and it's been so beautiful, the journey. The last fortnight when we were speaking about the trip, we spoke about how Swami extended the stay. He was supposed to leave on Guru Purnima morning so that Swami could make it on Guru Purnima day in Mumbai, but Swami extended the trip, and after being very, very endearingly appealed to by predominantly the African community, Swami has extended the stay. And last time when we were speaking to you, the last episode, we spoke about Swami's visit to the Murchison Falls. A very classic picture of Swami posing with that falls in the backdrop is something which we've always loved. A very beautiful picture. And we were talking about that trip. That's when we ended the satsang last week. So continuing with that, there's not much time left in Africa now. So we'll be probably winding up Swami's African trip this week or the next one. So to speak about it and to continue with the journey, let me invite Arvind to join all of us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem. And again, you know, the feelings of a kind of sadness creep into the heart, because whether you are physically with Bhagwan during a visit, or when we are going through the Sai Bhagavatam of a visit, when it's coming to a close, we feel sad. You just want it to go on and on and on, because it's so beautiful, so full of memories, so full of lessons, so full of divine sweetness, you know. Even if we don't gather the lessons or message or whatever, just going through the story is so sweet. It's a wonderful way to fill the time. It's an enriching and elevating way to fill the time. The same holds good when we travel with Bhagwan also. So whether the travel is coming to a close when we are traveling with Bhagwan, or the travel is coming to a close when we are virtually traveling with Bhagwan, both the times it leads to a kind of a tinge of sorrow in the heart that it's getting over. But well, with Swami always that sorrow gets replaced with the joy that when we are with Swami, life is going to be a joy. Because if African sojourn is getting completed in afternoon satsang today, we will be taking up something else related to Bhagwan, and that will be equally sweet, equally captivating, equally joy-filling. So that is the beautiful thing about Bhagwan, that it is, when we are with Swami, life is one continuous sojourn of peace, love and joy, because that is what Bhagwan is, peace, love and joy. So, you know, you were speaking of Murchison Falls. I was once again, you know, reading how Professor Kasturi, in his own inimitable, jocular manner, he speaks of how the visit to Murchison Falls is memorable, because he says, while we went to Murchison Falls, we had also the Kasturi Falls, you know, the accident that they had, and we had referred to. In fact, in the Satyam Shivam Sundaram, I just thought of bringing this up again because we forgot to mention this name. Professor Kasturi locates the place. He says it's Nakka Songola. Mm-hmm. He says this Nakka Songola is such a word that you keep rolling it on your lips, on your tongue. And mm-hmm. when I did this, he said that it became like a kind of Namasmarana, because every time I say Nakka Songola, I am reminded of two things. One is, he says, start early, drive slowly, reach safely. So Nakka Songola is a shortened version of this complete long proverb. Mm-hmm. And he also says that I wish that we put up a stone marker at Nakka Songola saying that here four people's lives were saved as they chanted Sai Ram. You know, he says it's a thing worth remembering, because your life was saved by taking the divine name. And as we said last fortnight when we were discussing the African visit, in many photos later, as they moved up towards the Murchison Falls via the river, you know, the Nile River, and they went through the hippo pool and saw the crocodiles and all that. In all, many of those pictures, we can see Professor Kasturi present there with a bandage tied to his head. So, yeah, we had completed all this, and we were speaking about Bhagwan returning back to Kampala. And to come back to Kampala, he had to move via Masindi. That is a place from where they had gone to Murchison Falls, which is in the north of Uganda. And Kampala is way down to the south of Uganda. So they had to return to Masindi, but since it had rained that day, the roads were all slushy, and there were, of course, the wildlife blocking the road, especially the elephants. 2-3 times, Professor Kasturi records how there were elephants nearby, because of which their convoy had got slowed down. So it became quite late in the evening and even beginning of night as they reached Masindi. And that is where at around 9 p.m., 9 at night, Bhagwan decided to bless another devotee, not one devotee, multiple devotees, because he stopped at a 2,600 acre farm, you know, huge, it's mind-blowingly huge plantations and all these, where paddy, sugarcane and banana was being grown in the midst over there. This is a place called Kikonda, which is about 80 miles away from Masindi. At a devotee's place, the devotee had built a Sai Mandir. Mm-hmm. Bhagwan decided to make a short stop there to bless this devotee and all the other people at the plantation.
You know, whenever you read all of these names, which, you know, Nakasongola and Kikonda, they say that there is beat and rhythm in the blood of the African people. Now you can really see that from the names they've given, you know, Kampala, or the various names that we came across. The Bale, Kakira, and Kabale, Nikai,
yeah.
All of them sound like there is a beat and rhythm
yes.
to the name itself. And going back to this acre, which I mean, this estate which Swami visited, 2,600 acre, the beautiful thing is in the middle of nowhere, you know, it's somewhere hidden even in the country of Uganda itself. There is this devotee who has built a mandir for Swami, and I'm sure he would not have dreamt in the, you know, in the least that Swami would one day come and sit on the throne that he had kept for Swami there, the altar that he had set up there, because Swami would come there. And Professor Kasturi describes that as a beautiful traditional mandir. It was a circular building built with thatch and, you know, typically an African cottage kind of a thing. But it was a mandir built for Swami nevertheless, and Swami goes there. And the beautiful thing is, it's a huge property, and as you said, plantations of paddy, sugarcane and banana. So he must have had a number of workers, the local workers who were there. And the beauty was, Swami goes there and Swami starts interacting and blessing those people even before he started interacting with probably the family and the owner, the host of that region. And Kasturi writes that must have thrilled all of these workers, you know, because whenever a delegation comes, whenever probably guests would come, they would probably interact with the owners of the place more and, you know, look around and spend some time in the property. But here was somebody who had come, seems to be a very, very important person, because from the way the host must have been behaving. But he comes and he interacts with the people who were sitting there first before he even took his seat and started, you know, interacting with the host.
And later on, Bhagwan also delivers a discourse there. And in the discourse, you know, Swami, let us remember that a few hours back, just a few hours, for us it has taken a fortnight, but for Bhagwan, just a few hours back,
right.
He has been at the Murchison waterfalls, he has seen nature at its best, hippos, crocodiles, elephants, deer, bison, so many of these animals. And Swami comes and he speaks about how it is only man who seems to be swerving away from his swadharma, from his dharma as a human being, because as Swami said there, you will not see a tiger eating grass, nor will you see an elephant eating flesh. Every animal sticks to its dharma. It is only man who is swerving from the dharma, and therefore this is a lesson that he can learn. And this was the theme of the discourse that Bhagwan delivered to all the people who had gathered there, all the workers as well as the host here, saying that, you know, possibly these people from Africa had this feeling that Swami is staying so far away in India, and, you know, if we have to learn lessons for life or whatever, it is so difficult for us to travel, or he has to travel here. But here was Bhagwan saying that Africa has been blessed in bounty by nature which is also divine. If only we open our eyes and truly see, there are so many lessons, so much divinity that we can experience even in the nature that is very much present in your country, because they were right next to this area where wild animals roamed like domesticated animals. Emphasizing on that, the entire discourse was focused on how man too should follow his dharma. And Swami says man's dharma, for example, he says the heart, hrid daya, a heart without compassion is not a heart at all. So the nature of the heart is to be compassionate, just like the nature of the fire is to be hot. So Swami said that man should stick to his nature irrespective of how others are behaving or what others are doing. Because we often, you know, we don't stick to our nature. Our nature is to be loving, kind, compassionate. And when we don't, when we get angry, when we get upset, when we get irritated, and when we injure or harm others verbally or physically, whatever way, we seem to justify it to ourselves saying that, no, but that person did this, this person that did that. Here Swami, when he emphasizes that it is a dharma, it is a nature, a fire is always hot, irrespective of what is happening around. Even in the desert, the fire is hot. Even in the polar ice cap region, that a fire is hot. Because it is the nature of fire to be hot. So also Swami is emphasizing that man must stick to his nature. And when we say man's nature, it doesn't depend on circumstances, people, surroundings, anything of that sort. And this was the powerful message that Swami delivered there at Kikonda.
Right, and I think this is a message which probably Swami carried from Africa and was repeating it to all the others, I'm sure, even after he came back to India. But even as Swami was leaving this place and traveling back to Kampala, Professor Kasturi writes that, you know, Swami began writing a letter to Goka, who was, I think, at that time still the Vice-Chancellor of the Bangalore University and would eventually become the first Vice-Chancellor of the Satyasai University. So Swami wrote a letter to Gokak where he started, I mean, expressing the same feelings. I mean, it is sad that man is only being who does not, is the only being who does not live in harmony and unity with even animals do so beautifully, right? Mm. So Swami says how, you know, they drink from the same pool. And we've seen that, you know, images of Africa where you have the herds drinking water from one side of the lake and you have the predators drinking from the other side of the lake and together. And Swami says this is how the animals live and we seem to have lost that nature which we were all born with. And Swami would often say that from being an animal you should become a human. But Swami is saying that we have slipped to a level which is below the animal and we are not even, you know, in the state.
On par with the animal.
On par with the animal at sometimes. And that was the thing which again, you know, Swami was saying. And if I'm not wrong, I think there is a discourse which Swami delivers in Puttaparthi after he returned from Africa. And the overtone of that discourse also was the same. That, you know, the animals are there living their duty and you are not. But, you know, I mean, talking about the African trip as such, and as you were saying, it's coming to an end and it's a journey which always fills you with nostalgia, any trip with Swami. But I think this African trip is special in so many ways, because when you say a trip, it's again, it's a feeling of vacation and you always want a vacation to last forever. And then when you say Africa, it's a different imagery which altogether comes. Right? When you say Africa, it's about safari, it's a vacation altogether different from any other vacation. So I think when you say all of this together, going on a trip with Swami and going to Africa with Swami and the different trips which Swami made in Africa, the different safaris which Swami made, it's like, it's that all of that coming to an end, which probably will not be replicated anywhere. Swami could go anywhere else, as far as, you know, Swami could probably in Bandipur forest, but as we've heard accounts of the Bandipur forest, boys would rejoice seeing the tail of an elephant, right? You know, that's the best bet you had at wildlife. But here, the descriptions which you've heard, and, you know, and in fact, in that letter which Swami writes to Gokak, Swami also says, very excitedly, you know, we lived in a cottage which was in the middle of the forest. The leopards and, you know, the panthers,
bison.
The bisons and all of came up to the window and we saw all of this. We saw them standing in the middle of the road. We saw them crossing the road. Because these are all imageries which probably will never be repeated again. Not probably, never did repeat again as such, as described in this trip in the avataric life of Swami too.
Professor Kasturi has written multiple pieces about the African visit. He has written Sanan Sati articles. He has written it in the Santhyam Shyam Sundaram. He has written a book on that. And, you know, there are multiple times that it's not just that Swami was recollecting this visit and narrating it in discourses. Even Professor Kasturi has done that. And in one of such writings, Professor Kasturi describes about how people asked him, has Swami traveled abroad? And Professor Kasturi says yes. And then they ask where, and he says Africa, and people are stunned. Because he writes that people expect, you to go to America, because because in those days going to America was something like a great dream. It was something like a proud badge that you can wear on your chest, you know, a chest that is puffed with pride.
And especially for, you know, saints and sages and God men.
Yes.
America was the destination, especially in this period, 50s, 60s.
Correct. And we also know, like, Swami Vivekananda, Swami Paramahamsa Yogananda, all of these people made a big impact, and their impact was always big, but the moment they traveled to America and came, somehow they were more acceptable, they were more universal. Something happens as they go to America. So that was the thing prevalent then. So Professor Kasturi would say that yes, he has gone, but not to America but to Africa, and people would wonder. And Professor Kasturi writes that Africa was in need of Swami. Even to this day, Prem, you know, a cursory glance at the internet, at the videos, at the photographs. Africa is so, so, so beautiful. It's possibly the paradise on this planet Earth. And that paradise has been ruined sheerly by one being, man. Man. And when I say man, it's not like I'm referring to the Africans or something. I'm talking of mankind as a whole. Everybody is responsible. People of Africa, people of Europe, people of America, people of Asia, everybody, you know, because when you look at the kind of conflicts that are happening in multiple countries in Africa, even to this day, it was around this time in the 1960s and 50s that the seeds of all these conflicts were getting sown there. So I think at that time, it was Swami who went there to, you know, remove the weeds with love and try to plant the seeds of love. And I'm sure he has succeeded, and we will see the results in years to come. But Africa definitely was the one that needed Swami the most. And Swami does not travel because of places that he likes to see. When I travel to America, or when I travel to Europe, or when I travel to any other place, it's because I feel that there is something that that place has to give me. I will receive something from that place, and therefore I will choose places which I feel can offer me something. Therefore, by default, you know, we rarely go to a place that is economically more backward than where we are, or socially more backward than where we are, or what we perceive as a step lower than where we are. We always go to places which we perceive as a step higher, and that perception can vary. It need not be just economical. I feel some places are a step higher in nature, and I would like to go. But it's always about a step higher, because we are by default selfish. What can I get from this place? But for Bhagwan, it is never like that. It is which place needs me the most? Which place can I give the most? And that is the difference between selfishness and selflessness. So in all selflessness, that's what Professor Kasturi writes, that Africa needed Swami so desperately. And it looks like, you know, those seeds are still sprouting and growing, and Africa still needs Swami so much, because it pains the heart. You take any country, many countries, not any country, many countries in Africa, the top Africa, Central Africa, East Africa, West Africa, everybody is having so much of problems on the social front, on the economic front, on the political front. Our heart really bleeds for them, and we send prayers. And, you know, you, on top of all that, when you think of what Bhagwan did in 1968, you really can realize what is selfless love, because it's not about what you want to enjoy or what you need. It's only about thinking about others. And that's how Professor Kasturi records the reason why the only place where Swami went abroad is Africa, because possibly Africa needed Swami the most anywhere in the world.
I really couldn't agree with you more, because that's how it is. Knowing Swami, that would be Swami's approach. You know, what can I give to a group? What can I give to a community? What can I give to a country? That's how Swami's approach would be. But even as you were saying that, Professor Kasturi says that this is the reason why Swami did this. It only takes me back to what we've been talking in the Bhagavata Vaini in the past couple of weeks, where Arjuna gives that beautiful explanation of how we always look at the activities that an avatar does and say that this must be the reason, this must be the reason. And we build our narrative and our perception based on what we believe is the reason. But events finally show us that, you know, you never understood him and you could never understand him. And that really is what hits you. You know, here is Swami in Africa. Then you would say, I mean, the question would be that there are many other countries which needed Swami, and probably Swami could have gone to the Middle East. We see so much of conflict there now. Swami should have gone there and spread his message.
Mm.
But it's very difficult for us to say that this is exactly why Swami did something. Because we were just talking this morning, we were seeing some old footage of Swami giving darshan in probably the 80s, right?
Mm.
The thing which you look at, which strikes you when you look at that is, Swami is so leisurely. Swami is having so much time, right? There are about 100 people sitting there for darshan. It must have been sometime in the middle of the week or sometime in the middle of the year when there are no festivals. There are hardly any people sitting there, and even the people in the ashram may be busy with their activities, because Swami would say that, given your work, go and do your duty. And Swami was so casually walking around, spending time in the sands, having all the time. It only, probably you'll ask the question that, Swami, this time you could have been somewhere, right?
You could have better used your time.
Oh, Swami, you know, there's so many countries, in fact, talking about America. If you read Dr. Hislop's books, he would say that, yeah, this trip we made, the agenda of the trip was to invite Swami to America. And this trip was to finalize the agenda for Swami's trip, to itinerary to Swami's visit to America. Because many times it was decided and planned and finalized.
And if you look at that also, yeah, America economically is very rich, but how can you say that America doesn't need Swami?
Right.
Exactly. How can you say any place doesn't need Swami? Sri Lanka needs Swami, right. Nepal needs Swami.
And you always think that, Swami, you could have done this. Swami, you could have spent your time better. And in fact, Geeta Mohan Ram, who tells in one of her talks, that her brother, I think, was posted as a doctor in Africa as part of the UN medical mission or something. I don't recall. Mm. But he says this, you know, very, very desperately in need of medical treatment. They were... cases when, you know, there will be one hospital or one medical center for something like, you know, many, many villages in a radius of about 200, 300 kilometers.
Hmm.
And that medical center will be so poorly furnished. And there will be one doctor and one nurse or one helper there. And to take a person to a better medical center, you have to drive for 300 kilometers or something. And in such situations, the very thing that he would say is, Swami, what are you doing standing there in the portico talking to your students? This is the place that needs you, right? And Swami would, you know, miraculously help him in such situations, and even point out later that, yeah, I'm talking, spending too much time standing and talking here, right? And what would Swami be talking? We all know that. I mean, petty things, if you could put it that way. But that is the beauty, you know, you never can pin him down to, this is why Swami did this, this is why Swami did not do this. And that's why sometimes going through a visit like this, yes, there are lessons to be learnt, definitely there are plenty of lessons to be learnt. But even if you overlook all the lessons, just listen to the story and just travel with Swami in time.
Just allow it to seep within.
Right, there is so much, I think, just being with Swami in your mind, there is so much to gain, I guess.
Absolutely. And going ahead from Kikonda, it was, as I said, it was 9 o'clock at night when Swami had reached Kikonda. So by the time he actually reached Kampala, it was 1 a.m. the next day. It was the 13th of July. And the amazing thing, you know, this is possible only for the Lord, because such kind of attraction exists only for the divine. Bhajans were still going on. The whole day, what had started the previous day morning, bhajans, because that is when Swami had left for the Murchison Falls. People had gathered there doing bhajans, waiting for Swami to come back. And it's almost like 18 or 19 hours later, and bhajans were still going on. And Swami went and gave darshan. I think Africa has set records of sorts.
1 a.m. in the night.
Yeah, 1 a.m., that's what. So Africa has set records of sorts in terms of the times at which Bhagwan gives darshan, I think. Because even at 1 a.m. Bhagwan gives darshan, and the intensity and fervor had definitely grown, because it had now become more or less confirmed that Bhagwan is leaving on 14th. So this is 13th. 13th is the last day we have got with Bhagwan. So everybody had the same prayer, you know, Father, please don't leave us. Please don't leave us. In fact, on the 13th, though Swami reached at 1 a.m. in the morning, back again in the morning, he was fresh as a flower, ready for morning darshan. 7:30, as crowds have gathered, Swami is awake and... not awake, I mean Swami is up and he's already moving through. It was at this time that the mayor of Kampala himself came to personally make a request, telling Swami, please stay. Please stay, because there are so many people, stay for a little longer. and they tried their best, the devotees, the mayor, everybody, but it looked like Bhagwan had made up his mind. When Bhagwan makes up his mind to leave, the most intense of prayers cannot melt or whatever, because ultimately when we look at it, as you said, we are the ones who assign and say that because the devotees prayed, Swami stayed on, and because of the intense prayers, this person got cured, because of prayers this happened. It's all Bhagwan's will. Bhagwan had will to stay on for Guru Purnima, that's why it happened, and Bhagwan decided to leave, so he leaves. As we had discussed before also, it only brings up the fact, brings up the question as to what is the need for prayer then? Why does God ask our prayers? When we go thinking along this way and inquire deeply, we'll realize that it's not God who needs our prayers. It is we who need our prayers to God, because it forms a kind of contact with God. It makes us be in touch with God. And the ultimate form of prayer is to be in sync with God always. Because when we are in sync with God always, we are always peaceful, because all that we desire and seek is what God desires and seeks. It will always be in sync with the master plan, and therefore it will appear as if all our prayers are being granted. Because it's not like there is any separate my will and separate God's will. Our will become one divine will.
Yesterday I was listening to one of the talks where the person says that Swami was in Kodaikanal, if I'm not wrong. Mm. And one devotee came up to Swami and said, "Swami, you tell me about yourself. I want to know what Swami is." And Swami is saying, "Why do you want to know that?" "No, Swami, Swami had asked this particular gentleman to speak the next day or something." So he said, "Swami, unless I have a clear image of or idea of what Swami is, how can I even, try to speak about Swami?" So then Swami said, "Okay, you tell me what you think that I am, what you think of me." So this person became very enthusiastic and he said, "Swami, you're Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara, you're all of that." And Swami said, "Chi, they're only my managers." Swami said, "I've given them a job. I'm supreme in the whole universe," Swami said. Right? And then what Swami went on to say is, Swami said, "See, none of these things bind an avatar and his actions." Right? There is absolutely nothing like even karma, the punya that you've done and all of that, nothing binds me. Or all your ideas of, of good and bad and right and wrong, and because I am beyond all of that. And Swami said, "If you manage to please me, I can break all the rules and I can grant you what you want." Yeah? So, there's nothing like we can define what can be done, what cannot be done by Swami. It's a story, and it's nice to go back to it and say that once they prayed and Swami relented, the second time they prayed. And the way Professor Kasturi says is, from Swami's point of view, it is just that what he decides to do, because he's everywhere all the time. From Swami's point of view, it is not like I'm disappointing you, because you are thinking that I'm here and I'm not here, but I am always here and I'm always everywhere. Right?
Absolutely. It's almost like if you have to summarize it, there's only one rule with God, and that there is no rule. It's right. Almost like that. So Bhagwan had decided to leave, and people came from everywhere. Professor Kasturi records a few places. Mombasa. Mombasa is on coastal, the coast of Kenya. It's a very distant city. Mm-hmm. And from there people had come. People had come from Jinja, Mbale, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, Kakira, Kabale, Ikae, Kapila. All these are in Uganda, and people had even come from Dar es Salaam. Dar es Salaam is the largest city in Tanzania, and I happened to read up a bit about the history of Dar es Salaam. It's amazing, mm-hmm. but I'll not go into that now. But the most interesting thing is the word Dar es Salaam. Dar means house and abode. As-salam means of peace. It's very interesting to note that Dar es Salaam means the abode of peace, mm-hmm. almost like Prashanthi Nilayam. So, yeah, people had come from all countries, and groups had come with the sole objective of trying to convince Swami, stay longer, Africa needs you. You have visited three countries, Uganda, Tanzania and Kenya, but we want you to visit other countries also. With that prayer they had come, but Bhagwan, apparently the excuse he gave was, he said, "No, 22nd, I have to inaugurate the Anandpur campus. It's very, very important." And see, I feel these things you can feel the importance that Swami gave, you know, like for education, and this was none of the people at that time, I think, even guessed how this would form the fulcrum of the next few years of Bhagwan's life, next few decades of Bhagwan's life, the entire education, whatever, you know, the mission that Bhagwan began, the mission of educare. It all began with this college at Anandpur. And Bhagwan said, no, it's a very important thing. I have to go back because 22nd is the inauguration. That is what he said. And people, you know, just could not do anything. What basically happened was the darshan got elongated, therefore. From 8 o'clock in the morning till 10:30, Bhagwan was going on granting darshan. And interestingly, on this day, as he granted darshans, people, like how we would do after sports meet, all the students will gather group-wise and tell, Swami, please, one photo here. So different devotee groups were getting formed and everybody was requesting Swami to come there and pose for a photograph. And I believe that on this day, Bhagwan posed for innumerable photographs with many, many devotees, leaving behind them memories in the physical form for them to cherish when Bhagwan leaves.
Right, and there are so many beautiful pictures that we have seen. Many of them are recorded in these books, where Swami is standing with the people from African origin. I think many of them were university students who came, and you know, Swami obliged. And very beautiful pictures of all of them standing around Swami. And Professor Kasturi writes that, you know, it was so very heartening for them to see, because it was not just that they were fascinated about Swami's presence, which probably could have been seen in the first few days of Swami's visit, where a lot of them gathered just to see who is this person who's come, and you know, just to out of curiosity. But he was saying that now he was seeing people who were genuinely, literally flocking around Swami, and you know, he could see that some of them were breaking down when they were saying, Swami, please stay back for some more time, or Swami, you know, they're praying to Swami for a Pad Namaskar, or all of that.
In fact, Kasturi himself breaks down. He says, right, when he saw hefty, tall, you know, African policemen, you know, when you look at them, you feel that no emotion can even come within a 10-kilometer radius of them. Such kind of powerful personalities breaking down and weeping like children, telling Swami, please stay, please stay. Professor Kasturi says that when he saw this scene, he himself was in tears, and he could experience the divine love that exists between the devotee and the Lord. But Swami had already made his mind. So this was a day when Swami granted many, many interviews, many darshan, many photographs, vibhuti, so many things. So it was a day of great physical interaction. And at the in the evening also, the darshan and bhajan session went on for longer than usual. And that was how the 13th of July came to an end, with Bhagwan giving himself completely physically to all the people there. The 14th of July was a Sunday. As the sun rose, everybody knew that, you know, this was a day that they didn't want it to come, because it's the day Bhagwan is leaving. But I think to go into that and what happened on that beautiful day, the 14th of July, we'll take a quick break and continue on the other side of the break.
Murari, Yadav Madhav Ganga,
Welcome back, dear listeners. The 14th of July, as I said, the Sunday dawned, and at 10 o'clock in the morning, after giving again one more round of darshan to all the thousands who had gathered, Bhagwan left for the Entebbe airport. There was not a single eye without tears there. Everybody seemed to be crying. Everybody was, you know, feeling so sad. They were feeling that a big part of their life was leaving, and that was the kind of feeling everybody had. The scheduled departure was via the East African Friendship Plane. That was the airline. The plan was from Entebbe, Bhagwan would fly to Nairobi. And from Nairobi, Bhagwan would fly to India, Mumbai, via the Air India Boeing aircraft. So, the departure was scheduled at 11 o'clock. And around 10 o'clock, Bhagwan left for Entebbe. But after having morning darshan, thousands of people had travelled to Entebbe, and Entebbe airport, as we said earlier, is about 21 miles. It's almost like 35 kilometers. It's a huge distance.
Mm.
So in cycles, vehicles, scooters, omnibuses, cars, whatever possible, people, thousands had travelled and they had gathered with the hope of getting one last darshan there. And as Professor Kasturi was boarding the aircraft, he saw the motto of the Uganda national crest, which said, "For God and my country." And he felt that it is perfect for this country, because that is the kind of people, more than the country, people have love for God. And on the crest also it says, the motto says, "For God and the country." God is coming first. So he definitely felt that it has been perfectly selected, because for people God comes first. And that was the kind of love that people were having there. And at airport there was another darshan session. Swami moved around the people, blessed them, interacted with them, touched physically as well as the heart of all the people who had gathered there before actually proceeding to board the aircraft. In fact, Professor Kasturi writes, even as he was boarding, at the door some person came and handed him a book, you know, a book called At the Lotus Feet, and asked for an autograph. And Swami opened it and signed, "Be good, do good, think good." This person wanted to, with blessings Baba of course, this person wanted to send this book to his sick daughter so that she can read, and this is how Bhagwan blessed it and gave it to him. So, at the Entebbe airport also, to everybody Swami gave himself before actually boarding the aircraft.
No, many times visitors would come to Prashanthanilayam, you know, they would come and ask you what are the different places to visit here. And, you know, they would come and say, "Yeah, morning we had darshan, so what are the places can we see?" So we would be telling them that, yeah, you can go to the museum and you can visit this temple. And if you finish all of these, you'll be in time back again for evening darshan. So I said, no, we've already had Swami's darshan, we've seen Swami, so you tell us what else is there to see.
Hmm.
See, I think when you visit a place like Prashanthanilayam, and if you come as a visitor, as a tourist, you will feel that I've seen Swami once, so that's ticked in your itinerary. But I think only when you really look at Swami as something very, very special, when you do that, then you will be like, every glimpse I can get, because, you know, we've seen the way devotees would run when Swami goes out in a car know, every bump would be taken off by people. Every turn, there will be people standing.
Because they know the car will slow down.
Right, and the same people would run and stand at different places. You know, that will happen if you really look at Swami as someone who's, you know, something more than somebody whom you can see once and you've seen once. And, you know, that is the feeling that you'll have. And that's what Professor Kasturi writes. When you look at these people coming in vehicles and cycling and climbing trees and trying to get every glimpse of Swami possible before he was going to leave the land, it really means that you know, Swami had become more than just somebody who had visiting their land, some celebrity or something like that. And that's why he said when he saw that board, you know, for God and for their country, it was so very apt because they'd really in many ways recognized what Swami was who had come in their presence. You know?
And, you know, while everybody had the prayer that Swami, you should not leave, Swami, you should not leave, prayer is not just verbal or in thoughts, right? Prayer also can be done through actions. I feel just the act of a person pedaling those 21 miles.
Right,
each,
exactly.
That's such an intense prayer.
Showing what Swami means, right?
Yeah, and I feel, you know, that prayer Bhagwan answered in a very unique manner. What happened was this aircraft actually broke down. There was some kind of a malfunctioning in the wheel. Because of which, once they had boarded the flight, all the passengers had to disembark again, you know. So Swami got down from the flight and Uganda, as Professor Kasturi writes, got 2 more hours of Bhagwan to themselves. So Swami was there in the lounge and he was joking with Bob Raymer for some time. Bob Raymer, whom we narrated multiple times in this visit to Africa. Apart from that, many other devotees again got another chance of interaction. So for a person, you know, this is just my imagination, okay? Like a person who started pedaling and possibly he's trying to reach and he knows that, you know, on a cycle you can't go beyond a certain speed. That's all it is. You're trying your best to reach, but it's late. You think Bhagwan has left and possibly you reach at around 10:45, 11 and you know, but you're told that Bhagwan has already boarded the aircraft and the aircraft is going to taxi down the runway and take off and you've got tears in your eyes. You have burnt out your lungs trying to reach here to get one more glimpse of this lovable form in orange and you're not able to see. And at that time, the aircraft comes back, stops, the door opens and Bhagwan walks out. Oh my God, what it is. I'm sure that for that person, it is like for my sake, Swami came back again. So, this is one more thing that we have seen in Swami's life. For all that you know, this story which I say is absolutely a figment of my imagination could be
even for one person, really.
For one person or it might have been the experience of multiple people with similar things.
Exactly. I mean, that's what we were talking sometime back. There is no linearity in quantity and, you know, this much time I'm spending, it must benefit this many people. That doesn't belong to Swami's approach at all. Swami is like, even if it is for one person, that's what Swami said about the entire Africa trip. He said, I'm going to visit one devotee.
Yes, Dr. C.G. Patel's house.
Right.
And so that was how that Bhagwan stayed at Uganda at Entebbe for quite some time. The actual takeoff, instead of 11 o'clock, it took place at 1 o'clock. Now see, just imagine, Bhagwan is the passenger for which the entire Boeing is waiting there at Nairobi. Because everybody is a passenger and Bhagwan is also one other passenger, you know, because that is how it is booked. He's booked as another passenger. But everyone knows that it is the passenger because, not because of the VIP security that he has, not because he's a president or a prime minister, not because of the position that he holds, the office that he holds in the world, but it's because of the position that he holds in people's hearts. So, the entire crew, the Air India crew didn't want to take off without Swami. It is not like we'll take off and he can take the next flight. So, the whole aircraft, the Boeing aircraft was waiting for Swami alone at Nairobi. And therefore, when Bhagwan landed, again there was a huge crowd that had gathered at Nairobi airport to have Bhagwan's darshan. But, you know, Swami is setting the ideal. He said, no, it is not right to delay. It's already been delayed. And so, immediately he boarded the aircraft for takeoff from Nairobi. And it's amazing, you know, because it's almost like Swami was being apologetic that, you know, I'm late. It's not his fault, you know, the tires had malfunctioned there. But still, I feel these are the times when we realize that Swami's life is his message. Where is the need for Swami to be humble when he's the creator of, I mean, he's the doer of everything. and yet Swami exhibits humility. There's no need for Swami to be apologetic because Swami is never wrong. Swami is always right. And yet he's apologetic. Many times we have seen where Swami is apologetic. These are the instances I think should actually touch our hearts, and we should realize how humble our lives should be, how we should try to make our lives also like Swami's life so that our lives can reflect his message.
And I think with entering that Air India Boeing, officially the trip does come to an end, because never again he's going to step back literally on the land of Africa. Because I'm sure at that time that was not the feeling, you know, the way the response was from the people and the way Swami was so much at home that he chose to celebrate Guru Purnima there. I think they must have felt that Swami might come back every year. I think in some of the interactions Swami did say that I will visit again, right? So they thought that Swami might come back. Maybe it will become an annual visit. Maybe every Guru Purnima is going to henceforth
be celebrated. See, the amazing thing now is, Prem,
in Africa,
the two times when I got the opportunity of being with Swami, one is the Delhi-Shimla visit, one is the Hadshi-Mumbai. In Delhi, in Shimla, in Hadshi, everywhere Swami said, no, I will come, you know, because I think Swami is speaking of the truth that he is present everywhere at every time. In fact, in Hadshi, you know, I think it's also an appropriate time to tell now, between May 20th and May 30th, okay, is the time to visit Hadshi, because that is the time when they leave all of Bhagwan's, you know, residence, everything open even for the public to see, because they firmly believe that May 20th to May 30th every year is when Bhagwan visits Hadshi. So they open the room, keep everything neat, everything clean, and devotees are also allowed to go, because they say that, you know, when Swami is not here, it's not right for us to open his room. When Swami is here, his devotees are dearest to him, so we allow people. So May 20th to May 30th every year, you know, in Hadshi, we are allowed to visit Bhagwan's room where he stayed during his visit in 2009.
Right, but I mean, just recollecting, that's what they all would have felt, that probably Swami will come back and probably this will become an annual or at least affair, a biannual affair. But it was never to be, and you know, now to think of it, I'm sure none of the people with Swami also would have realized that this would be the only trip that Swami would make abroad. They all would have thought that this is the beginning of what's going to come, you know, in the following years, that every country eventually will get its chance. But now, in hindsight, to think that this was the only trip that Swami made abroad and was coming to an end, really, in that Boeing. And as it happens, in every trip, I mean, every flight journey that Swami takes, it was an opportunity for all the passengers there to grab their moments with Swami, and of course the crew, which would always take the opportunity to get probably some photographs and pad namaskar from Swami. And that's what happened in this flight too.
One member of the crew was in fact saying that, Swami, you know, I came for your discourses there in Kampala. I was trying desperately to attract your attention. I could not, and I was feeling sad that I didn't get an interaction. Oh my God, look at this. I am a crew member on your aircraft. And you know, Swami materialized vibhuti for him. So that is, when we read such instances, now you realize that there's nothing like you missed the chance with Swami or something like that. You can never miss what is written for you. You can never get what is not written for you. So there's nothing to worry, because if Bhagwan has to give you, you may be in the remotest corner of the universe, but Bhagwan will reach it to you unfailingly, 100% guaranteed. The other interesting thing is, though, you know, I thought of actually telling this when you said that Bhagwan could have gone to Middle East. I refrained, because Bhagwan did go to Middle East, you know. Mm-hmm. The plane that took off from Nairobi did not go to Mumbai straight. It landed at Aden. Mm-hmm. The port city of Aden, which was then part of South Yemen then. And you know, Prem, because the city came up, I wanted to read about the city, and I happened to read about Yemen. You know, Yemen, yeah, of course, all of us are aware from past several years, it is going through the most hellish of times. It's in a very, very, very troubled state. And Yemen is, among all the Middle Eastern countries, Yemen is the most impoverished. All the others, you know, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, all of them are pretty well off, Qatar. But Yemen is very, very impoverished, and it's been hit, and it's a huge humanitarian crisis that is going on there. Infighting faction, at the same time bombarding going on from different countries. Jets of different economically rich countries are pounding onto Yemen. There are rebels, and there are multiple factions and groups that are fighting. And in all this, the children, women and innocents are getting massacred by the millions. It's a huge crisis going on there. And it's, I don't know, somehow just reading this part made me feel good that no, Swami had it in mind. Because I don't think any word, any action of the avatar is in vain or without a purpose. And I definitely believe that there is a purpose why Bhagwan landed and was there on Yemeni ground for a good half an hour or so, where though he did not enter the airport, many devotees from Aden, many people, you know, they, when they got to know that there is Bhagwan on this Boeing, they rushed into the Boeing and there was a kind of an interview and darshan session in the front of the aircraft as long as it was there on the Aden airport.
Come to think of it, definitely it's not with an insignificant thing that Swami was there in that airport, as you said. You know, there's a very beautiful conversation between Swami and the second, V.K. Narasimhan, sir.
The former editor of Sanatan Sarthi.
You know, one day when, we all know that when Swami sits with some of these seniors, Swami would ask them what's the news, what's happening, and what's the current affairs, and they would eventually discuss about some of these things happening in these countries, especially conflict areas and all that. And in the course of one such conversation, V.K. Narasimhan, sir, told to Swami, he said, Swami, the kind of things that are happening around the world, the way man is, you know, killing another man, his fellow man, and the way there is hatred in the world, you know, one tends to think, how is the world not splitting into pieces? Why isn't the earth giving up and just splitting into pieces and says, go to hell, all of you. You know, you don't deserve to live on me. And Swami said, yes, that should have happened. That's how man is behaving today. And Swami went on to say, the only reason the world is together is because of my devotees. Right? And the way Swami said it, it's because of people who are in different parts of the world who have some kind of devotion
towards
for
God.
The Lord. That is what is keeping the world together. And to think of it, you know, when you said that Swami has said to so many people that I will come and I'll come again, the way Swami is reaching out to all of these places is through the devotion that people come to Puttaparthi and carry with them, you know, when they go back to their country. And literally that's what's sustaining this whole place. And we know the amount of devotion that the people in Middle East have for Swami. And we've seen, you know, in hundreds and hundreds, they all come from Dubai, Bahrain. Maybe most of them are Indians, but nevertheless, they carry with them this beautiful vibrations every time they visit, right?
Absolutely. And yeah, so as you said, it is definitely a heartening thought. And it is also a thought that we should continue to radiate love. That Bhagwan, as Swami said there, we have to stick to our dharma, our nature of being embodiments of love and peace. Even before landing in Aden, you know, Swami flew over Somalia, Ethiopia, all these countries. I feel even just Bhagwan flying over. How many countries in the world can boast of the Lord flying over, you know? So Swami flew over these countries. And I feel it's all blessed. The Indian Ocean is blessed. The Arabian Sea is blessed because Bhagwan flew over all of them. And it was 12:45 past midnight. It was the 15th of July morning again when Bhagwan landed at Santa Cruz Airport. And there, of course, the organizational heads from Maharashtra, the state of Maharashtra and in Mumbai, they all accompanied Bhagwan and they had come to escort Swami, and Swami went to Dharmakshetra where he rested for the night. This was already the 15th of July, and with this, you know, even completely the sojourn to Africa comes to a close. But there are some interesting things that happened on the 15th of July, the next day, because there was a kind of felicitation at Dharmakshetra. Interestingly, who was being felicitated? Come on, you know, because when we read, we realize that East Africa was being felicitated for hosting Bhagwan so wonderfully. So that was the program all about on the 15th of July. But I think we will discuss that and complete our sojourn to Africa after this little break. So, dear listeners, please don't go anywhere. We will be completing this African sojourn after this break.
Thank you.
So that's how Swami's visit to Africa came to an end, and we were talking about a felicitation ceremony which was organized when Swami returned to Mumbai. And interestingly, the felicitation ceremony was not for an individual but for East Africa, which means the three countries which hosted Swami, and it was not even a felicitation for the host of Swami, that is Dr. Patel, but for all of those people, because you know it was... From Swami's point of view, he was visiting one devotee, but I'm sure that visit of Swami, as we spoke of how, you know, those people literally even took whatever transportation they could get and they came all the way just to have Swami's darshan. And you know, it reminds me of another beautiful incident, and this incident Swami himself narrates in one of his discourses.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's about when Swami had gone to Kodaikanal. Swami was saying that some university students wanted to have Swami's darshan, and they were feeling that having Swami's darshan in Kodai is, I mean, there's so much crowd and you don't get Swami's attention. So they decided to follow Swami's entourage when Swami was going to one of these picnic spots on bikes. So they all get into these bikes and they follow Swami's car. And Swami is in the car and Swami is telling the people in the car, see these boys, they're following me, they want to have Swami's darshan. And somewhere as they were coming and trying to catch up with Swami, they meet with an accident and their bikes fall down. So immediately Swami told the people to stop the car, and Swami went up to them, and Swami, the others with Swami in the car came up to Swami, and you know, Swami literally lifted these boys and Swami started dusting their wounds and all that. And Swami sent somebody and Swami said, get oranges from the car. And Swami wanted to give them. And Swami started very lovingly reprimanding these boys. He said, why did you have to follow me like this? And why did you have to come in the, you know, drive so fast? And then these boys were saying, no, Swami, we couldn't have your darshan there, so we came. And Swami said, see what has happened. Now we all have met with an accident. So then these boys are saying, Swami, but it's such a good thing that we met with an accident. That apart from darshan, we also got sambhashan and sparshan, and we also got prasadam from Swami's hand.
Hmm.
And then Swami said, see, this is what will happen when your focus is on God. That when your focus is on God, even the troubles that you face on the way, you will see them as blessings in disguise.
And you know, this, when you narrated this, I was reminded of when we had been to Shimla.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the perspectives with which we see, you know, Swami had landed at Shimla airport, and Sai Prakash and myself, you know, we had separated from the group of other students because we wanted to cover Bhagwan's journey from the airport to the Shimla temple, Mandir, Bhagwan, mm-hmm. which he was going to inaugurate. So somehow we got into a car, the car of Mr. Arun Jain, the brother of Rajkumar Jain, sir, in Vrindavan campus. It was actually his superb driving mm-hmm. on the hills that we managed to reach in time for the landing. Because all of us were in a bus which was going so slow. He came midway, picked us up and took me and Sai Prakash to the airport. And from then when we were in the convoy, and the convoy was huge, Prem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not exaggerating. The convoy was something like about 130 cars.
My God.
Officially, it was about 10-15.
Okay.
But I think everybody gets a great idea at the same time that, you know, let's go to airport, receive Bhagwan and drive back with him. So it was a 130 car convoy, and we were about the 10th or 11th car, because after the official cars, the security and everything. Mm-hmm. So we were requesting whether he can go ahead so that we can take shots of Swami's car. So Arun Jain, you know, he managed to take us right near Swami's car.
Mm-hmm.
That is when, you know, we saw there was one security jeep ahead of Swami's car, which had an open back. The advantage of open back is if you sit there, now you can see Swami always. And you can see actually the interactions between Swami in the car and devotees on the road. So both Sai Prakash and myself were thinking how good it will be if we can sit in the back of that jeep. And it was empty also. But now we are speeding at 50-60 kilometers an hour. How do we do? That was when at one place some kind of a bhajan was going on. So the whole convoy slowed down, and it looked almost, you know, me and Sai Prakash in the car felt that Swami is going to stop and give darshan, because around 200 to 250 people had gathered, a shamiana had been put and bhajans were going on. So the moment Swami's car came to a stop, I jumped out of the car. My idea was, before Swami starts, let me get into the jeep ahead, okay? I went ahead of Swami's car and tried to get into the jeep. In the meanwhile, you know, Swami's car started proceeding and the jeep had to move.
Mm.
And a camera is hanging. It was not an open jeep. So it was at quite a good height, and I was trying desperately to jump into the jeep. The jeep had already was picking up speed. I tried 3-4 times, and if I had tried once more, I think I would have got sprawled on the road there. But I felt it was funny, so I just stopped and the jeep zoomed off. After that, Swami's car zoomed off. I saw Swami seeing me, and you know, I felt so scared, you know, what rubbish this is. And quickly I got into the next car and I went on. Instantly, as I expected, you know, I had an SMS from one of students who were there with Swami in the car, you know. He sent an SMS saying, what on earth were you doing such a crazy stunt there, you know. So once I got this SMS, I was convinced that, you know, Swami is upset with me now. And what a sad time to make Swami upset with you at the beginning of the visit, you know. The whole visit will go bad. So this was the thing. So I sent an SMS telling, please, I don't know if you can, I'm feeling very, you know, terrible about myself. Please convey to Swami my apologies, all this, you know, all that. I'm sending long SMSs. Finally, I get a message saying, no, Swami is not upset, he's concerned, he's feeling. Swami apparently said, why is it that my child, my boy, my student, whatever, is not having a car to travel? Why is he struggling like this? And you know, when this SMS reached me, I got off tears in my eyes, Prem, because you know, in my own perspective, I'm thinking of all this, but in Swami's perspective, it is so totally different. You know, I learned, that is what I feel is so beautiful about this divine love, that it always thinks about others. I never for a moment imagined that SMS is being sent for me because Swami inquired in concern. I was thinking Swami is booting me there, you know. So this was a very, like when you were narrating about that accident of those boys, it just triggered in my mind. So this is what happened. Anyway, coming back to this felicitation ceremony that you spoke about. Because it was a felicitation ceremony, there was a chief guest. And the chief guest here was K.M. Munshi of Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, of that fame. Kulapati Munshi. And it was beautiful to hear him speak, because he spoke of how discouraged, disillusioned and frustrated he was, thinking that the world is going from bad to worse. People are giving up their faith in God. The glorious Bharatiya culture is going down the drain. He said that it is this kind of intense sorrow I had But now, seeing the way Bhagwan has been received at Africa, seeing the, hearing about the different things that happened in Africa, my heart cheers. I am feeling thrilled. I am feeling a hope. I feel that this has been a revelation. I am convinced that Bhagwan is affecting and transforming hearts of millions of people across the globe. So it was with this celebratory and exaltation manner that the whole felicitation ceremony began with the speech of Kulapati Munshi.
Right, and probably for those who really don't know this teacher of K. Munshi, as you were saying, Bharati Vidya Bhavan, I mean, he had literally taken it upon himself as his life mission to spread Bharatiya culture. Because many of these books were reprinted in the Mahabharata, written by Rajagopalachari, who is one of the most beautiful publications that Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan did. His own writings, K. Munshi's writings, the the Krishna Avatar series, one of the best books you could ever read on Krishna. And he would say that Krishna is my hero and I've written it as I see him. And, you know, because he was somebody who, I don't know what exactly, I think he was a lawyer by profession or something. He was a very, very celebrated man who had taken it upon himself. That's why he established the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan. And this is something which Swami would himself say, that when he finally heard Swami and he saw the culture around Swami more than anything else. And that was what inspired him to say that, Swami, now I can rest in peace because I know the Bharatiya culture is safe in your hands. And that's what he had apparently told many times to Swami when he had interacted with Swami.
And when Bhagwan actually began his discourse on that day, you know, on the 15th of July, this discourse is present in the Sathya Sai Speaks, titled Emergence of Enthusiasm. You know, I feel it's very aptly titled for what happened possibly. It might have other reasons, but I just felt that that is what it is. It has been wrongly dated as the 14th of July in the Sathya Sai Speaks, but it is the 15th of July discourse. Bhagwan began addressing this very point that K. Munshi had raised, and he said that the sad state of affairs today of the Bharatiya culture is because the legitimate inheritors of Bharatiya culture are neglecting this Bharatiya culture. Swami went on to say that this Bharatiya Samskriti has given shade, comfort and peace to everyone. The kind of shade, peace and comfort that no science can ever give. And Swami further went on to say that the greatest contribution to mankind from Bharat, from the Bharatiya Samskriti, has been the statement, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam, that everything is divine. And Swami said it is very important that one must realize this unity, that God is in everyone. And then Swami gave the example of Karna to say, to emphasize on what happens when you forget this unity. What I mean to say is, Swami was saying that if you forget this unity, that Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam, that all are one, it was bound to lead to pain and sorrow the way it happened to the Pandavas in the case of Karna. That is the example Swami gave.
Right, and I think Swami went on to explain the whole story of Karna as we know it. And the one of the central themes, there are many, many little themes in the entire Mahabharata war, and I think in the Bhagavad Vaini Satsang we'll come through that maybe, I'm not sure. But one of the things which the central themes is the enmity between Karna and the Pandavas, who were actually brothers, who were from the same mother, but they did not know it. Karna comes to know of it a little later, but the Pandavas don't come to know of it till Karna actually gets killed by one of their own. Arjuna gets to kill him. So Swami says that throughout the Mahabharata war, there's so much of enmity, but when Karna is killed and, you know, Mother Kunti actually comes and starts crying, and that's when the Pandavas realize, why is our mother crying for an enemy's death? And then Mother Kunti says that actually he was your eldest brother. And Swami says that instantly the jubilation that they felt at killing a important member of the enemy camp vanishes, and they start crying that, you know, God, we have killed our own brother. And Swami says this is the same feeling of remorse that you will feel when you realize one particular day that, you know, the person that whom you have fought with all your life, had enmity against all your life, was in fact your own brother.
Swami said that when this truth, the truth gets misunderstood as diversity because you are viewing it through the glasses of your ego. What you see as diversity is actually one. And you will realize this, and beautifully, as you said, through the story of Karna, Swami highlighted it. It was at this point in time that one very unforgettable and memorable incident in Professor Kasturi's life, which has now got become very popular and famous, happened actually. What happened was, referring to Bhagwan's visit to Africa, Swami said, you are all celebrating Bhagwan's visit to Africa, that Bhagwan came back from Africa, whatever. People in Africa celebrate that Bhagwan came there. People here, you are celebrating that I completed and came back. Swami asked, will anybody celebrate if the master of a house moves from one room to another? Mm-hmm. Swami said, I have just moved from one room of my house to another room, that's all. And then Swami made the statement in Telugu, ee prapanchame na illu. And you know, this discourse was being delivered from a dais on which the translator and Bhagwan, the translator here was Professor Kasturi, were not together, unlike what we have seen in the later years. So Bhagwan was on one end of the dais. Bang opposite on the other end of the dais was Professor Kasturi giving the translation. So in the two extreme edges of the stage were Swami and the translator. So when Swami said, ee prapanchame na illu, illu actually means house.
House, right.
And so Professor Kasturi translated it as, this entire world is my mansion. And as he writes it, he says, I was very thrilled at the beautiful manner in which I had translated, because I did not say this whole world is my house, nor did I say this whole world is my home. I used a very beautiful word. I said, the whole world is my mansion. And as I was basking in that joy, he says, suddenly over the microphone he heard the voice which said, no. And he saw, you know, he said that I had to look to my side over the clamor and din of the audience, because when Bhagwan made the statement in Telugu, people were clapping, you know, people were clapping, there was a thunderous applause. And Professor Kasturi looks and he says, Swami is having a stern face and saying no. So he was wondering what happened. He sees Swami leaves that mic and starts walking towards him. And he decides that let me also walk and meet him midway, you know, because let me not allow Swami to come near to me. And possibly he will tell, you are no good as a translator. So Professor Kasturi also turns and starts walking towards Swami. And he says, they met at the middle of the stage, far away from both the mics. So he says, nobody could hear what Swami was saying. But Swami said, no. You know, as Kasturi was himself basking in the glory of the word mansion, Swami was correcting him for the word prapanchamu. Swami said, hey, not world. The universe is my mansion. That is what Swami told him. And Professor Kasturi said that he walked back to the translator's mic and made this translation. But even in that short walk from the center of the stage to the translator's mic, he says, my jaw simply dropped in awe at the thrill and wonderment of the statement that was being made by this being who was shorter than me in size, younger than me in age, lesser than me in education possibly. But here was he standing and declaring that the entire universe is my mansion. Such is the broadness, you know, when they say expansion love, that is the broadness, a broadness that encompasses the entire universe.
And the broadness which Swami was talking of, you know, the interesting thing is, here is this discourse which Swami is giving in Bombay, and Swami is speaking about Indian culture and reviving Indian culture. But when in Africa, Swami was referring to the animals there. Because, you know, the people of Africa drew their values from, you know, observing nature. Mm-hmm. So Swami is saying that this is how you have learnt your values, this is how you should continue to foster your values. And when in India, Swami is saying that, you know, this is where your values are going because you're not respecting your Indian culture. You need to respect it. And Swami went on to say that, you know, this is how you should bring in harmony, where you respect the way each one approaches the truth. And Swami went on to speak about religion, and he said, you know, you don't, there should not be unity through uniformity, but unity through acceptance of diversity. And Swami said, see,
celebration of diversity.
Celebration of diversity. Because, you know, Swami said, see, we went to Africa, the flora and fauna there was different. You can't expect the plants and animals to be the same as in India. The animals and plants grow according to the conditions there. Similarly, Swami said, even faith is like that. People create religions and faith depending on the conditions there, and you should be in a mindset to accept that. And you should not literally say that only if you believe in God the same way as we believe in, we will accept you. And what a beautiful message it was, because even in discourses, Swami was reflecting that, right?
Swami even went on to say, you should all become good Hindus. And Swami defined who is a Hindu. Swami said, Him stands for Himsa and Du stands for Dura. One who stays away from Himsa or violence is a true Hindu. So Swami said, become true Hindus. Become people who stay away from violence. Become people who cultivate love in the heart, because love is the only religion that exists across the globe. That is what Swami said. But apart from all this, Swami spent a big chunk of his discourse recollecting very nostalgically and with a lot of emotion apparently the wonderful people of Africa, the wonderful culture of Africa, the wonderful place that Africa is. In fact, he recollected the people who did seva there, the volunteers, the mayor of Kampala. Swami said that the mayor of Kampala has told me that we will never say goodbye to you because you are ever welcome here. So I think that's another nice message. We never say goodbye to Swami because Swami never leaves us and we are never away from Swami. So a large chunk of the discourse, one can read it in the Satsai Speaks, was focused on the African people, the African countries, the culture, the people, the wonderful things that happened there. You know, it reminded me, we are almost nearing the end of our satsang here. It reminded me of the discourse that Bhagwan gave on the Christmas Day in 2006, the 25th December 2006.
Right.
I think one can definitely visit this discourse also and see it, because again, almost like 40 years after the visit, Bhagwan was nostalgically remembering on that day. I think a person of African origin gave a speech before Bhagwan's discourse. Mm-hmm. And seeing that, something moved Bhagwan, and Swami recollected the entire African visit in which he spoke in detail about everything there. Most of it we have covered. I think one aspect that we have left out is how Bhagwan fondly remembered Idi Amin. Idi Amin, the person who was at that time an army general in Uganda, later became the president of Uganda. Swami said that he was a huge person, well built, strong, powerful. In fact, in that discourse, Swami says, he gave me a handshake with great love and affection. But it such was a handshake that even when I was leaving Africa, I found it difficult to hold the handrails while boarding onto the aircraft. You know, so strong he was. And he said that he had great love for the country. You know, today, I say this because today we remember Idi Amin possibly as a despot, as a person who was very brutal, as a dictator. That's how we have painted him. But Bhagwan sees the intent. And Swami said that his intention was very pure and noble. He wanted to do immense good for his people. And he had great love for his people and he had great love for Swami. Said that in fact, he said that he had visited C.G. Patel's house to invite Swami to come to his house. And he said, when I went to his house, he made all his wives stand in a line and introduced each one of them to me. All of them were so tall. And so Swami spoke quite in depth. In detail about Idi Amin also in that same discourse where he spoke of the African visit.
Right. And I think one more thing which Swami said I remember is Idi Amin had gifted Swami with a huge cutlery set or something, and Swami said, I still use it in my kitchen, you know, in our dining hall, it's still there. And I mean, that is why it is so very difficult to understand Swami, and that is why Swami says, don't try to understand me. Because even those people from East Africa, the Patels and all of them, who eventually had to leave Uganda and go to UK, or, you know, some of them went to Australia and other countries, Canada, some of them. And that time they were, you know, sensing the brute force of Idi Amin and, you know, his dictatorship. It seems even during that time when Swami was helping all of these people leave the country, Swami would tell the people, no, but Idi Amin is a good man. You know, so he has a lot of love for his country. He has a lot of love for Swami. So we really don't know what is hidden amongst, I mean, even a person whom we meet who is very, very harsh, who is very rude, who is very, appears like a very evil person. We don't know what is hidden, the nobility hidden inside. And Swami oftentimes responds to that. And that's why we can never understand why Swami speaks to a person, why Swami does not speak to a person, why Swami did something and why Swami did not something. As Swami so beautifully says, Nannu artham cheyadaniki prayatnam cheyodu. Don't try to understand me. Anubhavinchu, anandinchu. Swami would say, just experience me and just be happy.
I'm sure you also remember, Prem, sometime in the year 2003, one of the Trai sessions when Bhagwan was in Vrindavan in the summer, you know, he began to, somehow in the middle of the conversation, Swami began to speak of Idi Amin.
Right.
And, you know, Idi Amin had apparently told Swami that, Swami, I can't live without you. You should come back again over here. If you can't come, I will come to you. All this, Swami said. But physically, apparently that never happened. The Swami never went back to Uganda again, or Idi Amin never came to Prashanthi Nilayam. But that day in the Thrice session, Bhagwan spoke about how Idi Amin is thinking of him. And Swami also said that, you know, I went and gave darshan to Idi Amin. It was very, you know, out of the blue and it was unexpected. I remember sitting there and writing that down in my diary also. And, you know, a couple of months after that, actually, Idi Amin died, you know. He died in an hospital in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. I think somewhere in August 2003 he passed away. But it was very amazing, and that Swami said that he gave him darshan. So it looks like, you see, that life also found fulfillment or whatever, because Idi Amin, in 2006 discourse also Swami is narrating of how he said that I can't stay without you, Swami, I must see you. So I think when you have that pining, you get to see Swami. That's what Swami revealed in 2003 during that Thrice session to all the students who were seated there. So, yeah, when we go through all this, it is amazing to see how special Africa is to Bhagwan. In that sense, you know, everybody, everything is very special. But when the avatar has come in a human form and has spoken so much about Africa with so much of fondness, with so much of love, I think before we conclude our afternoon satsang, we definitely need to offer our salutations and our salute to this beautiful continent of Africa for having hosted the Lord in such a beautiful manner and for having gifted us with such a beautiful part of the Sai Bhagavatam. With this, dear listeners, I think we bring our sojourn to Africa to a close. We have had a fulfilling time going through it. We have lived through it. We are grateful to Bhagwan for this experience. And we hope that all the different people who are hearing this, who have some associations or recollections of the African visit, personal experiences, will share it with us so that we get the strength, energy and material, most importantly, to possibly make a kind of a audio-visual presentation next year to mark the golden jubilee of Bhagwan's visit to this dark continent, which I'm sure is not a dark continent, which is a bright continent burning brightly in the effulgence of Bhagwan's divine love. With that, dear listeners, we bring the satsang to a close, offering it at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan. As always, you can write to us at listener@radiosai.org with all your feedback, your comments, your thoughts, as well as, most importantly, with respect to the African visit, if you have any material, photographs, experiences, videos, anything related to this visit of Bhagwan. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
Shama Ghana. Saishwara